Mark, can you fill for me as I work out where I am?
Yes, all good. How are we all today? What's the weather like where you are in the country?
It's okay. It's not bright, but it's not too bad. Okay. What do you think the weather would be if we were in Ghana today? Everyone, we were just in the green room earlier, and we were making Mark really jealous because we were talking about how beautiful Ghana is in West Africa. Hey, well, what do you think the temperature in Ghana would be today?
I think it will be in the 30s. It's always nice and warm in Ghana.
Yeah, and everyone, what's going on with our weather? Mark, what's it like down in sunny East Sussex with you?
Not so sunny today. It's a bit gloomy and miserable, but it's drying up, which is good. So farmers are a bit more smiley. We've actually started people. We have first cut silage for a couple of local
Have
farms.
you?
The Plumpton Co Local College, they cut silage, and your old stomping ground, they cut silage on and picked up on Saturday.
Excellent. There we go, everyone. Summer is coming and our social media lights are all live. Mark, shall we start
Let's get
Agri
going.
Leader April edition 2024? But we need a really special guest, Mark. What do you think?
Yeah, we do. We do a really special guest. I think we found one.
Okay. Do you want to introduce him?
Yes, no, I'm really pleased that we have got Awol from the AHDB exports team, our senior manager from on the halal markets, to join us and try and bust a few myths and see how UK farmers and our industry can tap into the halal market.
Excellent. And as we were just talking about in the green room, I've had a number of people, Harry, you know, I'm talking about you. A number of people approach us because they see this as a really interesting niche. And what we need, Mark, is an expert who's going to tell us about it. Hey, well, do you know any experts in this whole sector?
I assume I can try and say a word or two on that sector. I hate the word experts, but
Oh, no.
I try my best. Yeah.
I know, and we don't want you to be modest because you're our go-to individual. Come on, right? Let's do this professionally, especially for those people on the podcast and also those live on HDB, LinkedIn, our LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, and all the other social media platforms. So today we're delighted to be joined by Dr. Awol Fuzani, the Halal Sector Senior Manager for the AHDB. He works closely with levy payers and key stakeholders in this whole sector to create a better understanding of the requirements of halal meat production. His role involves introducing various initiatives aimed at promoting English beef and lamb as versatile and convenient products to halal consumers. He also collaborates with halal certification bodies to understand the requirements of the major export markets with a view to facilitating the export of English beef and lamb to the global halal market. What's that expression? If you want to be a millionaire, you've got to sell to millions. Although we've got 72 million people in the UK, there's a huge sector that could be exploited, especially via this sector. And that's also with particular focus on the Middle Eastern and sub-Saharan African markets. He's previously worked as an auditor and certification manager for one of the largest halal certifiers in the UK and is a trained British Retail Consortium trainer and ISO 9001 third-party auditor, so knows his stuff on that side. He's also made a significant contribution to academia via literature through the publication of a book on halal meat production and numerous peer-reviewed papers in very key scientific journals such as Meat Science, Veterinary Record, Animal Welfare, Food Ethics, and many more. He holds a PhD in animal welfare and meat science from Bristol University, and his research interests center around improving animal welfare at slaughter and evaluating consumer behavior. Mark, I think we found our expert.
I think we have. I think he might be able to answer a few questions today and give us a bit of some insights into the market.
But we're giving everyone that background to yourself. Talk us through your story. Everyone has a story. What's your story, please, sir?
Thank you very much, Mark. So my name is Awol, as you said, and thanks so much for the introduction. My background is in agriculture and animal welfare. I did my first degree in Cape Coast University in Ghana, where I studied general agriculture. I then did my master's in Bristol University in meat science and technology. My PhD was kindly funded by the Humane Slaughter Association to investigate the humane aspects of cattle slaughter. So that is academically, that's my background. And as you said, Max, I previously worked for one of the largest halal certification bodies in the UK. So I have a rough idea of what happens during halal certification and halal slaughter. I currently work as this as a senior halal manager for the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, and my work involves working closely with farmers, retailers, and others in the supply chain to try and improve our understanding on halal and the opportunities that exist in the halal sector. I am a firm believer that, look, to add value to society and to people around you, you cannot just stick to your nine to five jobs. So what I've done is in my spare time, I do a lot of charity work. I founded a charity 4 years ago that is doing a lot in Ghana. Max, you know a lot about Ghana. We have supplied a lot of food aid to people in Ghana. We have successfully encouraged people into agriculture with the charity. Last year, for instance, we supported 10 farmers to farm a reasonable amount of farmland for arable agriculture. We also supplied them with input to improve our productivity. I also published books. I know you said I've published a book. I've actually published a number of books. I've published a number of book chapters, and I've published over 20 peer-reviewed journals, papers in scientific journals. So that is that. And I also do podcasting just to try and add value to society. I do things outside of my nine to five work. Yeah.
Thank you. Because we definitely need people like yourself. I definitely need people like yourself. Help me with this, Mark. In our sector, within the UK, because occasionally I've said it, and I think Mark and Isaac have occasionally admonished me, rightly so, but sometimes we can be quite myopic within UK agriculture. Having someone like yourself with that breadth and experience on an international basis, but who can centre on the UK market and show us the potential of exporting, I think it's hugely beneficial. Mark?
Yeah, no, just having that wider look and that wider vision is something that we need. And like you say, we get very focused on the detail of the point and don't necessarily put our heads above the parapet and see the wider opportunities and wider picture.
So just two things from me. Career-wise, and we always ask these sort of questions because we have a lot of individuals, younger individuals dialed in from university or looking to come into the sector, either to university or direct. Are you happy with your career and the way that it's gone within agriculture? Could you recommend your career path to the younger generations that are dialed in?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So as I said, when I did my bachelor's degree in agriculture, my aim was to work in agriculture. So I moved to the UK 20 years ago, decided to do my master's, and then did the PhD. And that paved the way for me to easily step into the agriculture sector. So what I would say to any young person looking to develop a career in agriculture is you need to find a path, you need to try and specialize, because there are so many things to do in agriculture. So I did the PhD in slaughter, in animal slaughter. And I thought, okay, I'm a Muslim. Why not apply my scientific knowledge with my religion to be able to support farmers in meat production? So it's good to identify what you want to do and then try and specialize in it.
Excellent. And isn't there an old saying that's in a world war, world recession, world pandemic, if you're in the eating or the cleaning game, you'll be fine because we've got to do those two things. And also to use your background and to be in such a specific area. That I suppose, Mark, we you and I know a number of people who, if you could be niche in a particular area and dominate it, whether it be on a marketing perspective or on an intellectual basis, is going to be great for that sector. But also, Mark, really, really good for you as an individual.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that focus is something that, yeah, you need to think about. And yeah.
Okay. And well, with our sector within the UK, we could also accuse us of being very, very commodity driven. And I suppose you could say that's because of the influence of the markets with the likes of the retailers. But to use that phrase again, if you can be niche in a sector and look to dominate it, you're going to be doing far better than trying to set up a business selling iPhone covers on Amazon, because every man and the dog tried to do that. So this halal sector, as we said in the green room, has already garnered quite a lot of interest about people that want to learn from you. Can you bust some myths myths about the sector and share some basic facts for those that aren't like myself that aren't fully aware. Tell us everything about the sector. We want to learn from you. Go, go, go.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I think this is an important question that I've always thought about, and I feel the halal sector, we haven't reached the full potential because there are still people in industry who are hesitant about it, and this hesitation is mainly due to misinformation about halal. So, for instance, many people in industry still believe that halal slaughter is barbaric. That is not true. If you look at the data we've got from the Food Standards Agency, halal slaughter of small ruminants, for instance, is done the same way as halal slaughter of small ruminants, or sorry, as slaughter of small ruminants during conventional slaughter. So what I'm trying to say is there is no difference, despite all the rumors or all the misinformation out there, there is no difference from welfare perspective between slaughter for halal and slaughter for the conventional market. The only difference, so what I mean is there's no difference in welfare. The only difference in process is the fact that during halal slaughter, a prayer is recited before the neck is cut. And this prayer has got is related to other practices in other religions. So for instance, Christians, before Christians will eat food, they offer the grace. They will say, thank God for the food provided. Is the same thing that Muslims are doing. They are thanking God for providing an animal for them to slaughter for food. So they are signifying the importance of the animal. It's not a barbaric process. The slaughter does not impact the welfare. Sorry, the prayer doesn't impact the welfare of the animal. It actually highlight the fact that Muslims hold in high regard the welfare and the fact that the life of an animal is being taken away.
Boom, there we go. Mark, I knew that, but I also didn't know all of it. I've always found it very interesting when I visited abattoirs, and I've been round a couple, slightly bizarrely, with a couple of vegetarians, and they were so positive about what they saw that it didn't change their aspect of being a vegetarian, but they saw how well the animal was looked through in that whole process. Mark, have you seen similar?
Yeah, no, definitely seemed very, very similar. I think the point there that really strikes me with what Al just said is that it's the no difference, and it's all about the welfare, and that's the bit that we need to focus on, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, and particularly with the world that we live in, we've got information at our fingertips which you can't necessarily verify that's the right thing. So we need to be quite clear that the focus is always on the welfare. It's just another. It's another way of dealing with the animal. But yes.
Absolutely. And what and gents, what about the sector, the global halal meat sector? It must be huge.
The global meat halal market is huge. We've got 2 billion Muslims around the world spending a huge amount of money, and if you take that 2 billion, the majority of them are relatively younger. So if you compare the Muslim population to the general population, Muslims tend to be younger. They also, from different studies, we know they've got higher disposable income. So these figures, also the fact that the population is growing, they've got high disposable income, and they also don't eat pork. They don't eat pork. They don't drink alcohol. So they are restricted in terms of where they spend their money. So the bulk majority of Muslim income is spent on lamb, beef, and poultry. So they are restricted in terms of the animal proteins they can spend on. And we also know from other studies, in the domestic market, that Muslims over-index in the consumption of meat. So all these figures are telling us that the Muslim pound is important, the Muslim population is important, the halal market is important for what we do in agriculture.
Okay, so you know the next question. Can UK farmers capitalize on this potential market?
Well, that is something we need to improve in terms of educating farmers on the opportunities that exist. Yes, they can. There are a number of ways to look at it. So we've got the regular halal market, we've got the religious festivals. So the regular halal market is what we have throughout the year. So Muslims continue to eat meat, and we know from studies that they spend more money on meat than the general population. They also tend to eat more frequently than eat meat more frequently than the general population. So that presents opportunity for farmers throughout the year. But there are festivals, for instance, Kurbani, where every single Muslims who is financially capable must pay for an animal to be processed on their behalf. This year, that festival falls in June, around the 16th to the 17th of June. During that time, Muslims require animals that meet certain criteria. If our farmers are better informed about these criteria, they could actually sell animals directly to abattoirs who are looking for animals that will meet that festival requirement. I know a farmer in Buckinghamshire. I don't like mentioning names of businesses, but I know a farmer in Buckinghamshire that has come out with a model where they sell directly to the consumer. So what they do is, even if the consumer wants to come on farm, they bring the consumer to the farm to say, look, this is how we look after our animals. Our animals are taken to this abattoir to be slaughtered, and we deliver the animal to the meat to your doorstep. That is a clever way of getting to the younger consumer, because the younger consumer is looking for better welfare, environmental sustainability, and high quality produce. 30 years ago, the halal market was seen as the market where all the rubbish ended up in. Things have changed. The younger consumer is looking for quality, welfare, and environmental sustainability.
Okay, and on that basis, is prepared to pay a premium for it.
Absolutely, they prepare to pay. I'll give you another example. Kurbani, the festival I'm talking about, last year, lamb carcasses were selling for £300. £300 is a lot of money to pay for a carcass. Outside of the festival, maybe that will sell for less than £200. So from less than £200 to £300, that's a lot of money. And this is because, as I said, the consumer is younger. The consumer has got a high disposable income, so their propensity to spend high is high. Again, I'll give you another market. In Dubai, I did a study, or I did a very snap visit to retail recently, and a rack of lamb, rack of British lamb in Dubai was selling for almost £50 per kilo. £50 per kilo is a lot of money. In the UK, that will sell for maybe less than £20 per kilo. So there is value addition in the process. Whether you are selling carcasses during the festival in the UK, or you're selling premium products to people in countries where they've got reasonable amounts of money to spend.
Okay, so you know what I'm going to ask next. So say our Mark is a beef and sheep farmer, and he's just the his product is just going one route to the stock standard abattoir. Would it be easy for him to change to be able to serve this halal sector, or are there a number of steps that he's got to do to pivot towards this halal sector? Is it an easy move to go from conventional to halal?
It may require some amount of work to be done. So, for instance, if you were selling through, I'm just giving an example here. If a farmer is selling through markets and decide that, look, they want to diversify, they do not want to go through the conventional routes to market. They want to diversify into the halal market. There are a number of routes, but as I said, there is some amount of work that may be needed. They can during the first they can target the festival. The festival, as I said, a carcass was selling for around £300. They can do this by either inviting consumers to come on to farm to see what they do on farm in terms of welfare, in terms of
Brilliant.
husbandry. Yeah. Or they can also sell directly, like the Buckinghamshire farmer. They sell during festivals and outside festivals directly to consumers. And if you look at their website, as I said, I don't like mentioning businesses during public conversations. If you look at their website, their prices are much more than other products somewhere, because they guarantee that they can provide traceability from farm until the product is delivered on the door for consumers.
Excellent. Collaboration. I love this word. And over the last 3, 4 years, after everything that we've gone through, the better initiatives, the better successes that we've seen in businesses are when businesses collaborate. And we know that UK farmers are brilliant at what they do, but perhaps they're not the best at, say, marketing, or being able to create that impetus of getting people on farm. Is there other, I don't know the right words, that you just might be able to help me with, other agents in the halal sector that they could go to, that they could collaborate with, to look to get some of the product into that area, or should they look to go it alone, or should there be a combination of both? Is there collaboration to be had in the sector?
Yeah, well, I think collaboration is very, very important. So, as a farmer, there are a number of ways. If you want to serve the festivals, for instance, you could contact an abattoir, an abattoir that is supplying to the Kurbani market to say, look, I've got this number of animals during the festival in June. They would have reached the right age. There are other requirements. I think we should just mention about them as well for
Thank
farmers
you.
to be aware. For the animal to be suitable for Kurbani, the lamb, if it's a lamb, it must reach at least 6 months. Entire animals are preferred to castrated, and undocked animals also attract a premium compared to animals that have had their tails cut. So all these requirements, if your farmer is able to meet them, he or she can contact an abattoir and say, look, I've got these premium animals. Do you want to sign a contract with me, or do you want to work with me to get it out to the consumer? If yes, that then they can get it there. The other way to look at it is to work closely with the Muslim community, like the mosque. And my services is free for farmers,
Love it.
for processors. If you contact me, I can take you through the process to direct you on where to go in order to maximize contact within the Muslim community.
Mark, I'd be interested to get your take on this. It sounds a lot easier to pivot, to go towards this new sector rather than saying go organic. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I suppose thinking about what Awal's just said, I said in terms of production methods and actually the production of the beast, good British farmers are brilliant at growing lamb and beef, which is good. The difficult bit is those connections with the markets and ensuring that they're meeting those standards. Would you agree with that Awal? It's not around the production methods, it's around, like Max has said, collaborating with the right abattoirs and the right people to be able to tap into this market.
Yeah, absolutely. This market is all about contacts. It's about whom you know. It's about knowing the process. If you know the process, if you know the right players in the chain, you can collaborate with them. And as a farmer getting started into the sector, I would encourage that you collaborate with somebody who is already in the chain to get your products out there to the Muslims. But what I also want to say is, as I said earlier, 30 years, 50 years ago, what didn't go to the general population, what was regarded as inferior products, would have ended up in the halal market. Things have changed. The consumer wants traceability. If a farmer can assure the consumer that, look, this is my farm, I get my products to this abattoir, after slaughter, the products get to you. That is excellent traceability, and that is what the consumer is looking for. So collaboration is important. To get started, before once you get your feet into the field, then you can decide to go alone.
And gents, just to reiterate it, AHDB, the levy that you pay for the AHDB, it is in effect not funding, but giving you the service of, oh well, to give you that steer, to create that network, to give you that collaboration. I hope we're not crossing the line here, guys, but it feels like you could do an event. It feels like you could do an event on a farm, or at an abattoir, or perhaps on a run up to one of the festivals. Mark, have you done anything like that within the AHDB?
So, yes, but maybe not in this field. And I'm sure, oh well, there's a range of resources, tools, or contacting you or some of the export team directly that will be able to provide some advice and guidance to be able to do that. But yeah, some kind of a event, could be very valuable.
And go on,
Can I
go on.
It's important to state that yes, we do have some events. Our knowledge exchange team have been brilliant over the years, and what they do is they get farmers together from around the UK for us to come in, speak to them, interact with them, highlight these opportunities to them. So we are in the in that arena, and farmers who are looking to gain more information on the market, my services, as I said, is open to all levy payers. If you get onto our website, there are a number of resources on it. We've got a booklet on Kurbani, which you can access, which has got a lot of information on. We've got a lot of video recordings on the website. We've got some booklets on the website that can help you. But our services, as I said, is open to farmers, to retailers, to abattoir operators. Our knowledge exchange team is brilliant. If you contact them, they can facilitate it in your region.
Excellent. quick question from where's Tom from? Tom from Middlesbrough. Is the market potential there, or if too many people come in, will the market get saturated?
That's a really good question. Look, there is somebody was saying that there is there's space for many people to still come in. Look, I'm not gonna say everything is brilliant. There have been instances where food processors, retailers have been trading standards have actually prosecuted or taken people to court for selling products that are not halal but have been described as halal. So this is where we need new players to come in with good intentions, to come in with robust management processes to be able to safeguard the integrity of halal products. So if you are one of those coming in with good intention, with good standardization, with good hygiene, with good welfare standards, I'm sure there is something for you to bite in the market.
Love it. Henry Cornwall, is the market margin there? Is a margin? I suppose what he meaning is if he's just growing standard product of beef and lamb, if he goes to this halal sector, is there better margin to be had?
Well, I've given the example with the Kurbani market where carcass prices is almost double that in the conventional market. I've also given an example in the export market in Dubai where prices are almost triple. There are margins to be had, but you need to understand the market properly. You need to understand the route to that market to be able to maximize the benefits of it.
Yep, well done. Next question. We're just changing the screens. Oh, it's a lady, Jackie from Derbyshire says, ethical sourcing. How important is sustainability and ethical sourcing in the halal meat industry?
That's an important question, very, very important. So in the halal market, what you don't normally hear about is the fact that environmental sustainability is very important. In Islam, there is, when we say halal, it means something that is permissible. We also have something called tayyib, which is something that is wholesome. In the Quran, which is the Islamic holy book, halal and tayyib normally go together. So what Muslims are encouraged to eat is something that is permissible, something that is wholesome, that is safe to eat. There is a third element called sustainability and environmental stewardship, which is very, very important in Islam as well. So Muslims believe that God created the environment in an equilibrium, and we are not as humans supposed to impede or sort of do things on earth that can misuse natural resources. So water should not be polluted. There should not be environmental degradation. Our water resources should be used wisely. Our trees, there should not be deforestation without replanting of tree. So environmental sustainability is an important element. So if you can combine all three,
Brilliant.
the fact that the product is halal, the fact that it is tayyib, wholesome, and the fact that it is environmentally friendly, if you can market these products, I'm sure the younger consumer in particular, they are better informed about these and they will be very interested in your products.
I love what you said about the because we need that information. information, don't we? I love what you're saying about the younger market, that how it's a bit like the Chinese market, that it's becoming more westernized, and the income per capita is going up, and hence why they're buying more red meat and cars. And it's fascinating to hear this on the halal sector, that it's a younger market, and they're buying more. A silly question number 63 for me. Can you run conventional stock and halal stock together on the same unit, or does it have to be separated? So it's just a bit like that sort of organic and conventional question. Can they all be run together, and come slaughter, they go off in their different directions?
That's another important question, Max. Halal and conventional, well, animals, whether they are destined for the halal market, can be farmed on the same land. The only problem when it comes to halal farming and conventional farming is the feed that you use.
Oh,
All
well
feed,
done.
I know in the UK, we at the minute are we not allowed to feed animal derivatives to ruminants. But in some parts of the world, it is possible that ruminants are fed with feed of that is derived from other animals. If that is the case, the feed should not come from pigs. So feed,
Yes, well done.
yeah. So, but if it's just as we know in the UK, where most of our animals are largely red on grass, then there shouldn't be any problem rearing animals, whether conventional or halal, altogether.
Mark, it sounds a lot simpler. You with your livestock head on, to rather than segueing your whole unit over to organic, on all the positive issues around that. If you wanted to convert or run some of your units as halal, it sounds a lot easier than, say, converting to organic. Would that be right, Mark?
Without being an expert, but yeah, definitely, it seems like as long as you're getting in contact with people like Awal and using resources on the HDB website, that it's understanding the market and understanding the standards, and probably dabbling your toe in the water with a small proportion to see how it goes in the first instance. Once you've built those relationships with the various processors to deal with that. So yeah, it sounds very, very straightforward. The one question that I've got come in is this is we're talking you're talking a global market, and it sounds like the Muslim community, in terms of their disposable income, they're upgrading and eating quality red meats as we move forward in through the years, and are more interested, particularly the younger consumer, in the sustainability and the environmental credentials of British red meats. Is there any sort of preferences around the world within that market? Is there any differences or nuances from, I'm being very crude, from a Muslim in the north of the UK to somebody on the other side of the world? Is there any kind of preferences or differences that, again, the system could be adapted for certain regions and certain elements?
Yeah, that's another important question. So, in terms of differences for preference for meat, I would look at it from where people are coming from. So, for instance, we know that many people people who are originally from Jordan tend to prefer lamb. Other people from most Arab countries will prefer lamb to mutton. There are people from Bangladesh and other parts of the world will prefer mutton. So depending on where the person came from, depending on what they were used to culturally, they tend to lean towards certain products. I also give you an example of a retailer in Wolverhampton that has cleverly come out with the idea of only stocking products that are seen to be British products. So, for instance, they have sausages, they have bacon that is of halal origin, things like that. And they have been able to attract Muslims from all over the UK. It's not a massive retail premise, but people are traveling from Manchester to Wolverhampton to buy products just because of the way their products are promoted, the way they are packaged, and the fact that if they want steak, they can easily get steak in their retail premises. Historically, the halal retailer have not really utilized butchery skills. So historically, they've always used a cleaver to chop carcasses into pieces. But now, clever retailers are using some ideas to tap into the general population, get what what is normally linked to the British or the conventional population, bring it to the halal market, and people are patronizing it. People are buying those products. So that's one clever way of tapping into the halal market.
Jez, I love that. Again, I've got to give an example of Tiptree. So Tiptree condiments, strawberry jam. So that is sold globally because the likes of the Chinese, again, using them as an example, love our Western style of food. And even to the point, I think that Tiptree have got a concession store at Southend Airport of all places for people flying out. Well, do you think there's a potential that that British beef and lamb on a halal basis, if it's branded up as British, it's going to give it a sense of exclusivity, that people in Africa or the UAE might be more likely to buy it because they know of the sustainability and the high growing methods that we got in the UK, and as such, there might be a bit more margin to be had. Do you think that's a premise? That's a route that we could go down to further elevate British farming?
Yeah, before I answer that, I'll just comment on your Tiptree comment. I invited some buyers from Saudi in January, and they came to have a look at some abattoirs in the UK. Now, when they came, they kept mentioning Tiptree. They said they want to go and see Tiptree because they're buying a lot of products from there. So I was like, okay. So I asked them where the factory was. I think they said it was in, they mentioned where it was. So they went to see them. And look, there are ways we can actually brand ourselves because if you look at British meat in Dubai, it's highly valued. If you look at British meat in Kuwait, it's highly valued. And the reason for this is many people in Dubai, many people in Kuwait have links to the UK. Many of them are educated in the UK. Many of them have got their second homes in the UK. So they are proud of their links to Britain. So anything with a British flag, they want to be associated with it. However, we need to come out with a global British meat brand. That is something we definitely need to work on. With the flag on there, that can attract people who value British, that can attract people who want to be associated with British. And those products will sell themselves if we brand them properly.
Yeah, it's like that old comment. Wherever you go in the world, two people have been there before you: the guy selling Michael Jackson t-shirts and the guy selling Coca-Cola, and now the guy selling Tiptree jams. But
There you go.
gents, with the AHDB, you're not just parochially centred at the UK. Mark, a number of your colleagues go out to some of the key food events globally, don't they? On this basis, to promote British produce.
Yeah, no, that's Owl and his exports team, the team that he sits
I'm
in,
sorry.
will be the ones that do that.
Okay,
Just to add, Max.
but so there's a huge potential to go out. I get really excited about this. There's a huge potential to go out.
Absolutely. At the minute as we speak, our colleagues are in Singapore, in FHA. We've got dairy and also meat samples there to interact with buyers in that region to showcase British product as a high quality product. So during at the shows in Singapore, people will be able to sample our cheeses. People will be able to sample our lamb, our beef and other products that we've got out there. We just came back from Dubai in Gulf Food, where we had so many British exporters with us. I think we had around 30 delegates that came out with us in
Wow.
Dubai. During that time, we had lamb on display. We had some butchery of lamb. We had some cooking of lamb where people could come in and taste our products. So that is some of the things that your levy as farmers, your levy as abattoir operators, is used that you may not be aware. So we are investing your levy in opening and maintaining markets outside of the UK.
Okay, brilliant. Old war story of mine from a friend that sells automatic milkers. He once tried to sell an automatic milker to a farmer in Ireland, and when it was explained to him that he wouldn't need to milk his cows again because this automatic robotic milker was going to do it for him, the farmer said, "Well, what do I do then?" With beef farmers and sheep farmers, lamb farmers, are you finding them resistant to change to these to this potential new market? Is there a level of education that we're going to have to do that you're having to do, you and your team are doing now, or are they very receptive? Are they up for this potential new market?
So 7 years ago, when I started with AHDB, when I was anytime I was speaking to farmers, they were of the view that halal slaughter was barbaric and stuff like that. And I tried to educate them that look, that is not the case. As I said at the beginning of this podcast, halal slaughter of small ruminants, for instance, the majority of it is done the same way as conventional slaughter. But things have changed. 7 years ago, there was some resistance. At the minute, as I said, our knowledge exchange team is doing an incredible job an incredible job out there trying to reach out to more farmers. And one thing about reaching to farmers is farmers are very open to listen. Once they're listening to the facts, they may have had some information from the web, from YouTube and from Google that is inaccurate. When we meet them, we present the facts to them, and that has changed the attitude of many farmers towards halal. Once they know the facts around what is going on, once they know the opportunities, they become better informed, and they seem, well, they become more receptive to the idea of halal.
So let's go for the big one. With you, go on, Mark, you go first.
I've just got another question come in on the message. Just thinking about, there seems to be this massive opportunity within in this market and in this sector, both internally and domestically, but also globally. Two-part question. One, how much volume do we export of British red meats into the halal market globally? And then B, if Mr. or Mrs. Farmer is thinking about tapping into this market but wants to provide mutton to Jordan, they can't do that on their own. They need to, how would they identify the processor or the exporter to actually learn a bit more about how they can maybe look into supplying that supply chain?
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm sure many, many exporters will be listening, or new exporters looking to start tapping into the halal market will be keenly listening to how we answer this question. So the good news is I'm gonna answer your question in reverse order. So if anybody is trying to export to any country in the Middle East or any country in the world, and they are looking for information, your levy is invested, as I said, in opening ma new markets and maintaining existing markets. We have experts around the world, colleagues around the world, in Asia, in the Americas, in the Middle East, that can supply you with information about who to contact if you're trying to start exporting. So, for instance, if you were to contact me about the Middle East or Africa, I can supply you with reports that highlights what the opportunities are and who the main importers are. If you want me to do introduction to you to those importers, I'm happy to do that. And it applies to my colleagues from other regions in Asia, in the Americas, in Europe. Europe is one of our biggest markets, so let's not always forget about Europe. Now, you also asked a question about the volume of halal meat that is exported. The majority of our halal products are consumed in the domestic arena. 20% of consumption in England is due to halal. It is done by the Muslim community, so it's a huge domestic market. In terms of export, our next big market after the domestic market is Europe. France has got roughly 6 million Muslims. That is almost twice the number of Muslims in the UK. So that is a huge market. Germany follows. That is another important market where we export a lot of our products to. Apart from the domestic and the EU market, we've got the Middle East market. As I said, the Middle East market, Kuwait has got one of the strongest economies. They buy a lot of lamb and mutton from us. Jordan is a mainly lamb market. So if you contact us, I think we've got the right information to give to you as an exporter to be able to identify the best places to go. You may be thinking exporting to the Middle East, but we may advise you and you feel, Europe is just on our doorstep. I'd rather go to Europe. Or you may feel the domestic market too is important. Let me just stay domestic. So there are opportunities out there for people who are looking to tap into either the halal market or just the conventional market in terms of export.
What does success look like for the UK beef and lamb sector being involved with the halal sector?
I think success, I would say, is in the area of carcass balance. And what I mean by carcass balance is the UK will eat certain parts of the animal. So, for instance, leg of lamb may be popular during Easter, for instance, or even throughout the year. Now, when you absorb the leg of lambs, the rest of the carcass need to be absorbed elsewhere. If not, the abattoir will not be making profit. So our ability to sell each and every part of the animal to the consumer is what is making the British industry profitable. Now, the halal market provides this opportunity. I'll give you an example. If you look at feet, cow feet or sheep feet, this is a product that is not normally consumed within the general population. But cow feet, even sheep heads, are very popular within the Muslim community. They are considered a delicacy. So whether you are looking at maximizing your profit with this in the domestic market or export, there are opportunities for you to tap into that market. So I think success in the halal market is what we can do in terms of carcass balancing and profit maximization for our farmers and our processes.
Well done. It's all I totally get that, especially that example that if we're not utilizing getting the best possible margin out of a carcass in the UK, but with a different source, we can. It's obviously going to be beneficial all round. Mark, I've learned so much today. What about yourself?
No, it's been. Thank you so much, Al, for giving some time up in your very, very busy schedule to just run through some bits. I think the key bits for me is that clarity, that myth busting, which everyone, the elephant, the white elephant in the room, is always the around the slaughter and the quality. And I think you're quite right. And just using the analogy of the Christian's faith, grace, in terms of how the slaughter process happens, just maybe before you eat it and before you kill the animal, was really, really insightful. Then the bit around how the younger populations around the world of the Muslim community and how their disposable income is increasing, and their interest is definitely around the quality of the food they're eating and with the environmental credentials, and it's where it just rings out British red meats. And then the final couple of bits is about farmers can tap into these markets without making radical changes to the production systems, but just understanding and building some relationships with individuals within the supply chain and processors of halal meats, and actually can actually capitalize on that and increase profitability. And then down to the carcass balance thing, that's a challenge for the whole industry, whether you're conventional or halal, and we need to be better at that. And do we export sheep heads? Is that something? And cows, I didn't even know you could eat cow's feet, being brutally honest. Is that something we're actively doing already?
In terms of sheep heads, I know an abattoir. Again, I'm not going to mention the name of the abattoir that is selling significant amount of brains to Muslims in Germany. Africa is a huge market for sheep heads. Feet again, feet in the UK, feet is also very popular in the UK, and feet is important in the Middle East too, but in some market in where commodity is very important. So places like Saudi Arabia, where there is high immigrants or expat population that that may consider those products as delicacies and as valuable products. So those are market. So it's just a matter of which markets you're talking about, what part of the animal you're talking about. But within AHDB, we've got the expertise to be able to advise processors and farmers who are looking to understand where each and every part of the animal goes.
Gents, I've got an old college contact. who's a third generation beef and sheep farmer up in Shropshire. He and his father have been watching this, and they never really considered this sector before, but they're very intrigued and want to get in contact with the HDB to find out more. And on that basis, what can we do? Because it feels like, using my expression again, of collaboration. It's all very well on us leaning on yourselves and the HDB, but what do you need from the sector, from beef and sheep farmers to make this a further success? What do you need from the sectors to make this a success? Oh well.
I think, look, Australia, I'm just going to use ex Australia as an example. Australia has been able to cement their presence in the Muslim world in terms of halal meat. In Australia, over 95% of slaughter is done according to the halal rule. So all the animals
No.
that are reared in Australia, the majority of them, almost everything, is slaughtered according to the halal rule. So a Muslim would have done it in they would have done the prayer before slaughter. But they are very clever. There is huge government involvement within Australia in the halal, production. And also in New Zealand, I was with the Minister of Primary Industry a few years ago just to look at their systems in Australia. And I found that they had a halal manager within the ministry looking after halal. If you are able to do this, if the UK is able to mimic what Australia and New Zealand is doing, then we can maximize our reach within the Muslim world. The reason for this is that, look, if Australia is here and the UK is fighting for, say, a contract in the Middle East, Australia can say, look, we've got full support from the top down for halal. That is something UK cannot say at the minute. I know HDB has invested a lot in that arena, but we need others to come on board. We need our trade bodies. We need farmer associations. We need the government to come out hands-on to support the halal market like they are doing in Australia and New Zealand. If we are able to do that, we can give assurance to people, to the Muslim consumer in the UK, to the Muslim commune consumer in Europe, to the Muslim consumer in the Middle East, that look, we take halal very seriously. It's just like having an audit in your site. So, for instance, you're doing food safety audit against the BRC standard. If the auditor comes on site and you only in the opening meeting, there is only production staff, there is no CEO, there's no managing director in the meeting, there's no technical manager in the meeting. They'll say, look, what the hell are you guys doing? You don't take this seriously. You don't take your food safety audit seriously. So we need all hands on deck to be able to send a message to the consumers that, hey, we are here for business.
Mark, wrap up for us.
Brilliant. Well, I think, yeah, like I've just said, what a really, really interesting topic. And I think we could be sitting here for another hour or so delving into this. I've learned absolutely loads this morning. Yeah, been a great pleasure to have you on board, and thank you for giving up your time. I think if anyone is interested or wants to find out more, we have a plethora of information on the website under the Halal Market, or please get in contact directly with Alwell or one of the regional knowledge exchange team from the Beef and Lamb, which all those contacts are available on the website. And if you want to learn more about the AgriLeader program, please look on our webpage or get in contact with me. But no, it's been a pleasure. Al, thank you so much for giving up your time.
And our, just from my perspective, what you say about politically is really interesting, because we've talked about this on a number of occasions. The Dutch diamond, that the horticultural sector is very, very professionally run, because they have a link with government, education, and industry. And what you profess in the respect of getting government support. I don't know, being optimistic that there's an election coming up, whichever way it's going to go, whichever party gets in, I suspect they're going to want to refresh things. And so hopefully that'll be a good time, especially with the lobbying ability that the HDB have, and someone as charismatic as yourself, sir, to be able to push this sector. I think the future's going to be bright, guys. What do you think?
Just to clarify that, Mark, in terms of lobbying, we cannot lobby. It's up to the likes of the National Farmers Unions and others who can lobby. But what we need to do, what we are doing at HDB, is providing the facts, providing better information or factual information on halal, so that it will inform the decision makers to be able to support us more going forward.
Excellent. Well done. I'm going to phone up Tom Bradshaw at the NFU now and get that sorted. Gents, that was hugely enlightening. I think there's so much more to go at. Mark, can we have AOL back on?
Definitely.
And because it'd be fascinating just to see how this runs, because it's obviously going to go in the direction, but we need to give it a nice sort of positive push to help everyone, especially as per my example of the Shropshire farmers, third generation in this sector never really considered it, and now they are. I think it's brilliant.
Definitely. We'll definitely get Arrow back on if he's willing to join us again.
I'm more than happy to do that. And first of all, thank you very much for thinking of even discussing halal on this platform.
I think it's brilliant. Right, guys, let's go enjoy the sun if you've got sun where you are. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.